Elsewhere Publishing House presents Rage Behind the Screen, The Psychology of Online Hate in the Age of Social Media by Farah Zidane. Copyright 2026 by Elsewhere Publishing House. All rights reserved. Dedication to those who hurt on both sides of the screen. Introduction. Why are we so ready to attack? Every morning, before the first cup of coffee, millions of people scroll through their phones and enter a battlefield. Not one they were consciously recruited into, but one they joined by tapping an app icon. Social media, in all its luminous promise of connection, has quietly become one of the most reliably hostile environments human beings have ever created for themselves. And yet, we keep returning. This book is not a moral indictment of the internet, nor a nostalgia trip for a pre-digital past that was never as peaceful as we romanticize. It is an honest, scientifically grounded, and deeply human attempt to understand a phenomenon that touches virtually everyone who inhabits the modern world: online hate, digital rage, and the peculiar cruelty that emerges when human beings interact through screens. The question I want to begin with, and the one that animates every chapter that follows, is not, why are people so bad online? That framing is too simple and, ultimately, too convenient. It lets us off the hook. The harder, more honest question is, why are we so ready to attack? Because here is what the research consistently reveals. The people who leave hateful comments, who pile onto strangers, who coordinate harassment campaigns, who cancel public figures with righteous fury, these are not a separate subspecies of humanity. They are, by and large, ordinary people. People who may volunteer at their local food bank. People who love their children. People who, in person, might hold the door open for you without thinking twice. Something happens between the physical world and the digital one. Something loosens. Some constraint that ordinarily governs our worst impulses gets suspended, and what rushes in to fill that space is often shocking in its intensity and breadth. This book is structured around four interconnected inquiries. First, we examine what online hate actually is, its forms, its mechanisms, and how the architecture of social media platforms amplifies it in ways that are not accidental but engineered. Second, we go deep into the psychology of those who attack, the projections, shame spirals, envy, and tribalism that power digital cruelty. Third, we explore what it feels like to live under the gaze of the crowd, particularly for content creators, influencers, and anyone who has chosen visibility in a culture that simultaneously rewards and punishes it. And fourth, we turn toward survival and healing, not the shallow, just don't read the comments variety, but genuine neurobiologically informed strategies for building resilience without losing your humanity. I want to be clear about something from the start. This book holds compassion as a non-negotiable commitment, compassion for those who are attacked. Yes, but also, more uncomfortably, compassion for those who do the attacking. Not because their behavior is acceptable, but because understanding is the only tool sharp enough to cut through the problem at its root. Judgment, however satisfying, changes nothing. The central thesis of this book is simple and, I believe, radical in its implications. Digital rage is most often a mask worn over unhealed wounds. When someone goes online and destroys a stranger, they are rarely doing something to that stranger. They are doing something with their own pain, projecting it, displacing it, temporarily relieving the pressure of carrying it in private. The screen makes this process easy, consequence-free, and even socially rewarded. That is the horror at the heart of this story. But there is also a different story available. One where we learn to see the scream inside the cruelty. One where we stop mistaking public punishment for moral virtue. One where the people most likely to be targeted, those brave or reckless or ambitious enough to be visible, learn to receive hostility without being dismantled by it. That story is possible. This book is an attempt to tell it. Part 1. The Birth of Digital Rage. The Promise and the Paradox. The internet was, in its earliest public imagination, a utopian technology. Its architects and evangelists spoke of it as the Great Equalizer, a space where geography collapsed, where the powerless could find voice, where ideas could travel freely across barriers of class and nation. And in many ways, this vision came true. The Arab Spring was organized on social media. LGBTQ+ teenagers in isolated rural communities found lifelines in online forums. Medical patients connected across the world to share information that kept them alive. The internet genuinely expanded what was possible for human connection. But somewhere in the expansion, something else expanded too. Something that the utopian vision had not accounted for, or perhaps had deliberately looked away from. Because human beings carry their psychology wherever they go, including into new technological spaces. And the human psyche, it turns out, is not a smooth instrument. It is ancient, tribal, status-obsessed, and exquisitely sensitive to threat. It did not take long for these older instincts to colonize the new digital territory. The disinhibition effect, science of saying the unsayable. In 2004, psychologist John Soler published what became one of the foundational papers in cyberpsychology, The Online Disinhibition Effect. Soler identified a consistent phenomenon he observed across early internet communities. People said things online that they would never say in person. They were more aggressive, more sexually explicit, more emotionally raw, and, critically, more willing to be cruel. Soler identified several factors that produced this disinhibition. Anonymity was the most obvious. When you cannot be identified, you cannot be held accountable, and with accountability removed, the social penalties that ordinarily constrain behavior disappear. But anonymity alone is insufficient to explain the full phenomenon. After all, people continue to behave aggressively online, even when using their real names. More fundamental, Soler argued, is the phenomenon of dissociative imagination, the unconscious ability to treat one's online persona as a fictional character, a separate entity who exists in a different world than one's physical self. It's not really me saying this, the psyche implicitly tells itself. It's my avatar, my username, a version of me that exists only in this other world. This dissociation from one's actions is not a conscious strategy. It operates below awareness, and it is remarkably effective at suspending the empathy and self-regulation systems that ordinarily moderate how we treat each other. Neuroscience offers a complementary lens. When we interact with another person face-to-face, our mirror neuron systems are fully engaged. We see their facial expressions, hear the quiver in their voice, feel viscerally the impact of our words on their physiology. This somatic loop, the way we literally feel each other, is one of the primary breaks on human cruelty. It is why it is much harder to be genuinely vicious to someone who is weeping in front of you. Online, this loop is severed. Text on a screen carries no facial expression, no trembling hands, no flushed skin. The person on the receiving end of our words is not absent. They exist, they suffer, but we cannot perceive that suffering in real time and our nervous systems, calibrated over millions of years for face-to-face interaction, respond to their absence by treating the interaction as consequence-free. In a very real neurological sense, hurting someone online does not feel like hurting them. The person on the receiving end of our words is not absent. They exist, they suffer, but we cannot perceive that suffering in real time. From village to stadium, the scale problem. Human beings evolved in small groups. Anthropologist Robin Dunbar famously proposed that the human neocortex is calibrated for maintaining stable social relationships with approximately 150 people, a number that corresponds to the typical size of hunter-gatherer communities. Our cognitive and emotional systems for navigating social life were built for village-scale intimacy, where everyone knew everyone, where reputations were slow to build and slow to collapse, where conflict had to be managed because you would see this person again tomorrow. Social media put us in a stadium. Suddenly, a single post could be seen by thousands, then millions. A single misstep could be broadcast to an audience so large it defied comprehension. Our village-scale psychology was dropped without preparation or warning,